Welcome back to the Peggy Smedley Show, the podcasting voice of IoT and digital transformation.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Peggy Smedley Show. My first guest is a former White House Presidential Innovation Fellow and U.S. Representative to the United Nations on Smart and Sustainable Cities Project. He helped form the Zigbee Alliance and has been instrumental in many key aspects of the embedded internet. He holds more than 15 patents, wrote a book on combating spam, and testified before Congress on electronic commerce and computer security. Please join me in welcoming Jeff Mulligan, CTO for IIoT Jabel and co-founder of Skylight Digital. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Peggy, thanks for having me on today.
Oh, it is my pleasure. We've got a lot to talk about. So let's first talk about, you're an IEEE member. You've been doing so much. In fact, I even in the intro, I was thinking about all the things that you've led in the standardization for 6LoWPAN and helped create and deploy ARPANET and IP technologies in IPv6. There's so much that you've done. So talk a little bit about what you're doing right now and give us an update.
Certainly, Peggy. So Jabel is the largest contract manufacturer located in the United States, and we're third in the world. So it's about a $25 billion company. We build for pretty much all of the Fortune 500. And one of the problems today has been around the idea that everyone has these islands of ecosystems that don't interconnect. And I've spent my entire life saying, why don't we use IP? Why don't we connect things? Why isn't the Internet of Things built on top of the Internet protocol? It seems like it would make a lot of sense. We've sort of arrived at that, but we still end up having these unconnected islands or incompatible ecosystems, which I think is holding us all back. And this will eventually, we can talk about this as how this applies to buildings, but there's a better way to do this using open standards, open protocols, and open APIs. This is partly what Skylight Digital is focused on, along with lean, agile microservices. What I've done is put together an architecture of how you could take little, to use a trademark, Lego pieces, plug together different types of sensors using different types of protocols, and build out your IoT system in an open standard way.
When we talk about what's happening right now and we talk about building systems or we talk about open standards, it's been really tough because interoperability has been our biggest stumbling block to achieving commonality, being able to get the data when we want it, talking about ownership. And when we talk about construction, when we talk about manufacturing, it has been probably the biggest hurdle and the biggest argument, I think, between owners and developers and in any manufacturing environment, anything we do that most people get really frustrated about is who owns that data. How do you actually put something in the cloud? You know, where does it reside? There's a lot of discussion on that, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely, Peggy. I mean, you've hit on like four different topics that are critical in this, and data ownership being one of them. Data protection. I mean, in your last segment, you were talking about defense in depth. When you talk about zero trust, right? The term we used to use was defense in depth, as opposed to things like perimeter defense, where you had firewalls with a soft, chewy center, right? We have the same problem with a lot of the systems that are being built today, whether it's for buildings or whether it's for smart cities or other things, where the idea is, well, we'll just protect the edge. And then don't worry, trust us with our proprietary solution on the inside. And then we have, as you just pointed out, we have no interoperability. So if the vendor doesn't provide all of the tools and services or the pieces that you need, you then have to either break apart their security mechanisms, if they have any at all, or you end up you end up with this hodgepodge of different things that don't actually talk to each other. I mean, you were right on target. It has been, and whether you talk about building systems, home automation, smart cities, we have this interoperability problem. And so my focus has been since the founding, way back in the day of trying to found Zigbee, doing 6-LoWPAN has been focused on this idea there is a different way to do that through interoperability. And then we could get out of our way, right? If all the plumbing, right? We've done this in other areas, right? Plugs work. There is a standard for how your thing plugs into a wall. Why can't we do the same thing for the Internet of Things, for smart buildings, and then get to the real nitty-gritty problems around protection of our data, who owns the data, and all of that, and get out of our own way of how do we interconnect these things.
Let's talk about that, because I think when cities start thinking about how they go about putting things together, because, you know, the very first thing we start talking about is smart city, and then everybody thinks about this, and mm-hmm. we've had a lot of smart city failures because we start with these enormous ideas, nothing works, we can't integrate anything, and then the cities go, it just doesn't work, we can't get the funding. So the best way to start with a smart city project is always to start small. Find that success that you've had, integrate it, and keep building on that and finding out, because we know technology changes so fast. And as it's changing, you have to integrate things. Walk us through the best way on a building side of it. If we're going to have a building owner start, or cities going to get integrate things, how do they start future-proofing some of these things? Because that's part of the problem, because we build something, and then by the time something's built, something new has happened, and we realize, well, we can't integrate. We've used some proprietary thing that somebody's, and the famous thing, and I know you know this very well, we have gateways. We don't have common APIs. And there's a lot of problems with that, and now it's the devil's in the details here. So we have to really understand. So somebody listening says, I hear terminology, but I didn't really listen to what I thought I heard, and that might be the problem.
No, and you're exactly right. In fact, you brought up one of my favorite points. To me, gateways are a four-letter word, never to be used. Avoid at all cost. Because everyone just says, oh, we'll just put in a gateway. Just is another four-letter word. You're absolutely right, right? It's today we're in the situation of vendor lock-in, right? The vendors want to sell something that keeps you with them for the rest of your life. And that's not the right. Can you imagine if the internet were still just, you know, the AOLs of the world and the BitNets and the CompuServes, you know, these closed systems? The beauty of the internet was we don't have it all became interconnected. And so to your point, right, how do we get started? The idea being demand, use of open standards and open protocols, and then even more importantly, open APIs. Once you start to build a system, and it allows you to your point, Peggy, exactly, right, how do you future-proof? Or how do you get started? Because a lot of people are waiting to say, well, who's the winner going to be? I don't want to make a choice today because I don't want to pick the wrong technology. Well, through open APIs, I can build, let's just say, I could install in a building a person monitoring system, right, to see where people are in the building. I could put that in today using, and I don't care what protocol you want to use for communication. You could use LoRa, you could use Zigbee, you could use Wi-Fi, you could use Bluetooth. It literally doesn't matter so long as there's an open standard API to talk to that. You build a microservice that just provides information about people monitoring. And again, it's not necessarily the specific person, but are there people in these rooms? Now then, once you have an API for that, you could build a completely separate system that's managing lighting within the building only where people happen to be and turning off lights where they're not. Those could be two completely separate radio technologies, one using Zigbee, another using Wi-Fi. But through a common open API, those could now be attached, and you can build them as separate pieces in their own. You can decouple them, and I think that's a huge term for your listeners is to understand, is this idea of decoupling the installation, the development, and the deployment of these things, which allows you then to, as a building owner or the designer or whatever, to use the most appropriate technology at the time without being locked into some either old technology or being precluded from using some new technology going forward.
Are, when we're talking about, so everyone's understanding, common APIs, we're talking about using something on MQTT, IP, those common XML, something that's like that. So those are the terms they should instantly hear when we talk about a common API. That's in their mind, well, that they should hear, right?
They should hear, if talking to somebody, if they're not hearing things like TCP/IP, if they're not hearing MQTT, HTTP, XML, JSON, right? If those are terms that aren't coming out, no, those are the underlying protocols. Then when you talk about a common API or an a open API, it means that the programming interface, how do I request data from my my HVAC system in the building? There ought to be an open standard way. I ought to be able to go to, let's just say, for example, I ought to be able to go to a web page and request what's the current temperature in this room without having to jump through a whole lot of hoops. There ought to be an HTTP type interface to that, or there ought to be an MQTT interface to that, so that I can then have other systems that can attach to that, and they can all leverage each other to build a much smarter and, again, extensible and future-proof system.
So if we're talking about for a parking garage or something built on this, mm-hmm. we could say it's built using LoRa, or if they're building mm-hmm. on NB-IoT, we're expanding on what a city's kind of looking at. So we've talked about HTTP and TCP and MQTT. Now we're expanding even further. So let's talk about now, when we talk about the technologies for smart buildings and we're moving on, as we start looking at things that are happening, and they're starting saying you're decoupling all of this with all of this velocity that you've just described, are we seeing that things are going to be changing even more? I mean, do they have to worry? Because you just said they want to bet who's going to be the winner. We always say, is it going to be Apple? Is it going to be Google?
Right.
Is it going to be
right.
Amazon? That's what people think in their minds because, you know, that's what happened, right? When we think about the technologies in the home, we got concerned because things went away. And that's how people think, what they think on consumer end. On the enterprise end, what we're talking about, it's a little different. We're not talking beta VHS here quite so much right now. We're really talking
right.
about something a little bit longer. And now what we're saying, if we can keep our data, we're talking about longer-term technology. And I think what we're talking about, and I think you understand, where are we with 5G? How 5G is dramatically going to change how smart cities are going to be able to do things.
Well, I mean, yes and right. Yes and no. You can. You're right. And you can build a closed proprietary system on top of open protocols, right? And in fact, that's what a lot of people are doing today. And it, at the end of the day, it's about access to the data. And that's what I mean by an API, application programming interface, and having an open API means that the building owner, the city, should have access to the data from any of its disparate systems. So if you have a streetlight system, right, the city should have direct access to that data, not through some huge monolithic system, but through some simple programming API, which would then allow them to attach, say, smart meters to the using the system. If, again, going back to a building, right, if the perimeter security, right, the card key access had an open API, it would mean that you could put that in, you could build a completely separate solution that was managing heat and, let's just say, heat within a specific office, so that when the person swipes their card to leave for the day, right, it would be very conceivable and easy to build a design that would then say, wait a second, that person's no longer in their office. I don't necessarily need to worry about the heat or the cold, or I can turn the lights off in that office, right? We could build those as three completely separate systems that all through open APIs could talk to each other. They could use completely different radio technologies. One could be based on 5G, another on Zigbee, another on Wi-Fi. It just doesn't matter, but they could still be attached. They could be installed in completely different time frames. One could go in first. They don't have to be done all together. In today's environment, someone would come in and say, as a building specifier, oh, I've got a complete single solution for all of this. But then it all has to go in at one time, and the building owner may not be ready to put all of that in at the same time.
So what you've just described then, it over time, it could be anything. So the sky's the limit on the way you're communicating and who has the information. So whether we're 5G, 6G, 7G, 2G, mm-hmm. LoRa, whatever that might be, you've just described the way that cities can then are not locked into anything. The ability to access the information they need is not locked into any vendor, and it gives them the flexibility to grow based on their ability to adapt, based on their ability to affordably do the things they need to do as a city based on how their funding also works. And that's the way a city needs to think, because they don't have the resources of typical companies. Cities have to work on citizenship and resources that way.
And a city, I mean, if you think about a building is in some sense the same, right? A building can't necessarily afford to do all things at all times, and it's partly based on the constituency of the people that are inside the building, especially if you have sort of a multi-tenant building, right? You may want to build out different pieces. You don't necessarily want to do this all at the same time. In the blog, I just finished put the finishing touches on a blog I wrote. A dumb way to build smart cities could easily be applied, the same ideas, to doing a building. And exactly what you said, you want to have access. It's critical to have access to your data. It's your data, after all. That's what I think I find so frustrating in a lot of this is a lot of the vendors build out systems, and then they lock the data away and say, you really wanted access to that? Well, you can buy the keys for, you know, X number of dollars. Wait a second. It was my data in the first place. We need to have open access to all of that, whether it be a cityscape or whether it be a buildingscape.
What are the biggest mistakes? I mean, when we think about things, we want to put sensors everywhere. We want to have those sensors to give us, you know, people in the room. We want to know what's happening on our streets. We want to be able to know safety. There's all kinds of things. But now, if we think about just the building, are we going to have sensors embedded into the concrete of buildings? Or is everything going to change the way we imagine the way we think about the way we're going to drive on our roads, the way our buildings are going to be constructed? What do you see for the future of the way we're going to live our lives and the way we're going to occupy our buildings?
I think, and you hit upon a really key point, I think embedded sensors are a direction. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, I was talking about there's two curves that I saw. One was Moore's Law, right, which talks about the speed of computers and things like that, right? And it shows how computers are getting faster. But the other part of Moore's Law is that through the advent of new technology, the power required in order to do those computations is going down. So if you think about that curve going left to right, the power curve for doing computing is decreasing. On the other side of it is the power curve for doing energy harvesting and the capabilities going from left to right is going up. And I said that I felt we were going to have this crossover point. I think we're almost there. I think either 2019 or maybe mid-2020, we're going to arrive at the point where those two things cross over, which means, to your point, Peggy, we could put a vibration sensor. We could put a sensor inside, built into the structure, whether it's a building or a bridge, that is monitoring stress within that building, monitoring vibrations. That sensor could be poured into the concrete, and it could be left there for the life of the building because it can harvest energy and send its data, again, then through an open API. Right, I wouldn't want to be locked into, because that's going to be in a building. It's going to be there for 30 years. Well, I wouldn't want the rest of the technology in the building not to be able to use 8G and 9G as we get along. But by having an open API, that sensor poured into or built into the structure of the building could still communicate its information as necessary with the other new systems as they come along.
When we go and we tell listeners all these things are happening, do we put more fear and doubt in their mind about advancing? because that's what they say. Well, maybe we should just wait because there's so much in technology and that's what we've just done. We've done more FUD, you know, in this whole discussion.
And I am. I'm fearful of that, right? When we talk about, gosh, these things are changing so fast, and everyone says, oh, well, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to invest today because I don't want to make a mistake, right? No one, and I will stand on the highest mountain and yell out, no one has ever been fired for choosing TCP/IP, right? It used to be the old adage, no one was ever fired for buying IBM. I think today, right, any of your listeners, anybody who's building the system, so long as they absolutely are adamant about their system being put in using open standard protocols, non-proprietary solutions, non-proprietary data through open APIs, there's no problem. Build it today. Literally. Just do it. Put it in today, but insist on having an API, insist on the fact that you own the data, and then, again, that decouples you from the next system you put in. The next system, you make the same requirements, the same demands on the design, and then those two can be plugged together whenever is necessary. It's easy. That part is, I will tell everyone, that is trivial to do once you have open APIs. You have not lost the game, and you are future-proofed for whatever the next cool thing that happens to come along, whether it's ingestibles or wearables or whatever. They can become a part of the infrastructure that you previously had installed.
But
so there is no reason, Peggy. Don't be afraid. Do it today. Just insist on open standards and open APIs.
Do you have to look, though, at when somebody says things are changing? You say the common, you know, the open common open APIs, right? And you're saying that. Mm-hmm. Look at that. You're going to be safe at that. But at the same time, in common open APIs, now people say, how do I do it? Do I go and try to build fast? Do I build a large scale thing? Do I start small and something that's going to scale fast? How do you advise them to think about the way they're doing some? Because city projects, whether you're doing a city light project, mm-hmm. whether you're doing a transportation, a parking, I mean, they're different. Or whether you're just trying to figure out, leasing, building a construction and trying to figure out occupation, way people are occupying an area in a room, you're trying to figure out sustainability types of issues. I mean, all of those things, those footprints all matter. How do you get people to understand we're trying to get the best economical and environmental footprint as possible?
Well, so that's it, right? I think in one sense, if you don't sort of understand a direction that you're trying to get to, you could just end up meandering all over the place, right? And so if you don't, if a city or a building owner doesn't have some sense of idea, but I don't think you have to say, well, we need to solve all problems all at once. I think choosing something small, right? We hear in the lean agile community, fail fast. Well, I'd rather use the term succeed fast. Pick something small, pick something that seems to be a pain point in the building or just seems easy to, fairly small to accomplish, fast to accomplish, and get started. Part of this depends on the maturity of the organization within Internet of Things technologies or cloud technologies. You know, if you're new to that, pick a simple, small project. You don't have to, for a city, right? You don't have to do an entire smart city parking system. You could pick one parking garage. You could pick one floor of a parking garage. And again, my point being, through an open API, you could do one floor in a parking garage using one technology and try a different floor with a different technology. Those two can still talk to each other. This is the way the internet, right? Peggy, think back. The internet didn't spring forth the way it is today all at once. Vince Cerf, a friend of mine, did not conceive of YouTube and Google, Facebook, when he and Bob Kahn invented TCP/IP for the internet. They thought about one small piece. How do we get computers to talk to each other? Other things evolved after that, and I think the same thing can be applied to smart cities and smart buildings. They will evolve. They have to evolve. Pick something small. Pick something very pointed. insist on using TCP/IP, all of the things that we just talked about, an MQTT interface along with an open API, insist on owning the data, build that, build it today, build it fast, get it installed, try it out, and then evolve from there.
You said something that's very poignant, that you don't have to do the same thing. So if you feel like something in one area might be better for one place and something might be better in another, that gives you the flexibility with those open APIs. And I think that's for listeners and city managers who are really struggling about taking the leap. They know that they want to, but they're trying to convince the board and everybody else that they have to, the, you know, the city that, that they have to talk to. I think it's a great advice, and I really appreciate that, and I think that's so important. So, Jeff, tell our listeners where they can go to learn more about what you're doing and to, you know, consult with you. Where can we send them?
Well, a couple of things. One, if for contract manufacturing, JBuild, www.jbuild.com. You can use Jeff_Mulligan@jbuild.com. I'm more than happy to receive emails, even hate mail if you feel I didn't say something right. On the other side, if you're looking at understanding your path through smart cities and things, Skylight Digital, it's a new startup I started with some other folks who were at the White House with me. We're doing this confluence of open APIs, open standards, and open protocols. It's at skylight.digital. And again, you could use Jeff@skylight.digital. But this has been great, Peggy. Thanks for having me on today.
Jeff, thank you so much. All right, listeners, we are out of time for this segment. Tweet at us at ConnectedWMag. Stick around. We've got more to come. This is the Peggy Smedley Show, the podcasting voice of IoT and digital transformation. And remember, with great technology comes great responsibility. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Everyone is constantly on the go, and relying on technology can help keep us in the know. Use your voice-activated service to connect to the most influential Internet of Things podcast. It's as simple as, Alexa, play the Peggy Smedley Show podcast. Listen to current and archived shows, or let Alexa assist you in subscribing. Never miss an episode. Alexa, play the Peggy Smedley Show podcast.
Do you want to be a professional coach? Are you in business trying to make a real difference with people you manage or work with? Have you started a coaching practice that isn't quite getting off the ground? Get the skills you need to be a successful coach today with the Coach's Training Program from Accomplishment Coaching. The Coach's Training Program will show you how to help others focus and be more fulfilled. Whether you want to improve your company's bottom line or create a thriving coaching practice, Accomplishment Coaching can give you the distinctions and practices you need to coach others effectively today. Accomplishment Coaching has spent 6 years developing a cutting-edge coaches training program that will have you ready to coach people professionally in just 12 months, and you don't have to take time off work to do it. To find out more about the Coaches Training Program, just call 1-888-548-6813. That's 1-888-548-6813.
Peggy is taking it on the road in 2019 with live audio, video, and on-site appearances. The Peggy Smedley Show will be live at Internet of Manufacturing Midwest, IFT19, LiveWorks, and ConstructTech Technology Days, covering the IoT, AI, machine learning, and other emerging trends in the markets that touch your businesses. To learn more about upcoming tour dates, visit PeggySmedleyShow.com or ConnectedWorld.com.
Looking to be a successful entrepreneur? The virtual assistant industry continues to be a top choice for those looking to start their own business. The problem can be how to become a virtual assistant. Many turn to the Bible of the VA industry, the book, Virtual Assistant, the Series, and it's the perfect guide for office managers, executive assistants, and other administrative professionals looking to make the transition from employee to successful business owner. Go to vatheseries.com to get your copy today.
I've heard this is like one of the best pizza spots in town.
Yes, it is.
I'll do a slice of pepperoni, slice of vegetarian.
You got it.
And I will pay for all of that in 3 days.
In 3 days?
What's that mean? Well, wait, you accept credit cards. That money's not going to hit your account for 3 days anyway.
I need my money quicker.
At Chase, we hear you. With Express Funding, card payments are in your Chase account the next business day. Go to chase.com/expressfunding. Chase for business, so you can.
Compensated participation. All businesses are subject to credit approval. Not all clients are eligible for next business day funding, and additional terms, conditions, and restrictions apply.